Traditionally, for Dharma talks, there's a presentation of a teaching, ancient teaching, usually a koan, and then there's a kind of reflection from that koan in our daily life, our practice life, our daily life, so we can learn from that and apply it to our practice. So in that vein, I'd like to start with a traditional case from the Shoyuroku, from the Book of Serenity. It's a compilation of, I think, 100 koans or teachings, public things that have become famous or public, usually conversations between a teacher and a student, or two teachers, or something like that. This one is case 36 from the Shoyuroku, called Master Ma is Unwell. Matsu, or Basho, there's the sixth patriot, there's Wei Nang, and then there's Wei Ring, and then Matsu Theology, Basho. And he was a very important teacher in Zen, really, really important. And he had many, many disciples, and he was a powerful person. He was big and somewhat ferocious. He kind of scared his students. He was tough. So, big. And before the case is actually stated, there's a little introduction in these cases. And this is the introduction, which I'll read. Even investigating beyond mind, intellect, and consciousness, there is still this. Even studying in ordinary and holy paths, it's already too exalted. The red-hot furnace spurts out iron barbs. With tongue sword and lip spear, it's hard to open the mouth without running afoul of the point. Please try to bring it up. And here's the case. These introductions are kind of like, watch out. Watch out. You're about to run into something. So here's the case. Very simple. Master Ma was unwell. The monastery superintendent asked, "Master, how is your venerable state these days?" The great teacher said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." That's it. That's the case. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. I should show you my raksu. This was presented by the person who gave me Dharma transmission on behalf of Coven, or Vanya Palmers. It says, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." So this is obviously an important case for me, important topic. So I thought this morning we could investigate what this is. What is sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha? Someone is sick. Very carefully, it's kind of like the Eno. The monastery superintendent, the Eno, comes and says to the teacher, how are you feeling? And he's being very, very careful. Doesn't want to show too much concern or too much solicitation. After all, this is kind of a fierce guy. And but still, he's worried because his teacher is sick. So he just very carefully says, how is your venerable state these days? How are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, what's going on with you? Can I help you? Can I get you anything? A lot of this is implied within that those words. Can we do anything for you? And the teacher just says, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Big koan, huh? Big question mark. What does that mean? Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. In this context, I'd like to, if some of you were here two weeks ago, I think, when Donna Lynn was talking about the middle way. The middle way. And she talked about how the Buddha had a very privileged and sheltered and indulgent life. And then he got a kind of hit of reality, and he started to practice, and he practiced in a very demanding and ascetic way. He practiced very assiduously and almost killed himself practicing, and finally found this kind of middle ground where he took care of his body and mind. He took care of his whole self, you could say, and made a kind of situation where he could keep going and actually penetrate the great matter. So Donna Lynn talked about that and expanded on that. It was a really nice talk. I'd like to kind of start in talking about what this case means, and I'd like to start kind of at that middle way spot where that Donna Lynn approached. So the middle way, the this Madhyamaka, the middle way of the, that's talked about as a kind of quality of this practice, it is moderate in the sense that it favors no extremes. It does not favor any extreme, neither extreme of indulgence nor of discipline. It's what's called a healthy effort. And that's what Donna Lynn talked about quite a bit. There's another quality that we can see in the middle way, that it's comprehensive. We're basically saying the same thing. It's comprehensive in the sense that it includes the whole person. In Buddhism, we have what's called a threefold training. The threefold training is another way of being comprehensive. It includes everything in our whole life. So it includes conduct or ethics. It includes meditation or what do we call it? Practice. Our spiritual work. And it includes knowledge or understanding, actually knowing what's going on. In that sense, it's the threefold training. It's comprehensive, and it's and the eightfold path is another way of explaining the eightfold path of the Buddha. It's another way of saying a kind of complete compendium of what it means to be a human being and to be on a spiritual path. It's the whole. It's comprehensive. That's the middle way too. And there's a third. There's a third way, and this is the way that that this sutra, that this case is talking about. It's equanimous. It's the middle way is talking about a sense of balance or composure, of non-preference, of non-contradiction of opposites. So in our daily life, we have all kinds of opposites. all kinds of extremes. There's a great polarity of things in our daily life, and even we notice it in our practice life. Our good person versus our bad person, teacher and student, way and non-way. I mean, there's all kinds of dualities and opposites or extremes or polarities in our existence. And we have to acknowledge that we are drawn toward those extremes. Those extremes are very, very interesting. The juice is there, you could say. If you come to the middle, where there's balance, in a certain sense, nothing's happening. Or what's happening is not so interesting. It doesn't, it isn't passionate, or it isn't juiced. It doesn't have vitality. It's interesting to be angry about something, to have a bias, and to feel strong feelings about this and that. It's not so interesting. We're not drawn so much to have composure and to feel right in the middle of these dualities. So that's the third quality of the middle way, that it's equanimous. The metaphor is like the wind bell, that equanimous state is like the wind bell. Like the chime. Sometimes there's chimes up. There are a few chimes here at Chukotsi, right? The chime has no preference for making a sound or not making a sound. When the wind blows from one direction or another direction, it just responds. That's all. When it's time to make a sound is made. When the wind stops, it stops. So what did... What's the story here? This great teacher got a visit from his Ino, and his Ino said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha."
Commented, "Didn't you know that, you know, among the Buddhists, the main protagonist in the movie, The Big Lebowski, is considered..." enlightened as a Buddha. And there's lots of koans, but in a modern context. And so my translation of when he says moon-faced Buddha, sun-faced Buddha, is when the dude says, well, the dude abides.
Thank you,
I'm serious, too. I'm not putting you on. I'll show you the thing where Bernie Glassman is saying, "Oh, yeah, didn't you know that?"
Actually, Jeff Bridges came out with a book called The Dude in the Zen Master.
Yeah.
Talked about that. Bernie's his teacher. Yeah. That's okay. Well, the image, the historical image of a sun-faced Buddha is a Buddha, traditionally it's a Buddha that has, you could say, infinite life or infinite power or infinite capacity or infinite manifestation. It's a Buddha that lives for 100,000 years, or I'm not sure what the actual number is, but they list the number. It lives a sun-faced Buddha is a Buddha who just hangs around for a long time, has lots of power, is manifested as a Buddha. A moon-faced Buddha is a Buddha that just lives for a day and a night. It's the Buddha of just this time and just this place. It's an incidental Buddha, you could say. It's a Buddha of it, and you could say a moon-faced Buddha, carrying this metaphor a little farther, it's a Buddha that doesn't necessarily manifest or isn't necessarily even aware that they are a Buddha. It's a Buddha that's shy, you could say. It's a Buddha that's careful. It's a Buddha that's just has this moment to express itself, to be a Buddha. So when Master Ma, who was probably very uncomfortable, I don't know what was wrong with him, but he wasn't in a good physical state. Otherwise the whole Sangha, his whole assembly wouldn't have been so concerned. Said very carefully, because this was a powerful teacher, said, can we help you? He said, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. He said, what did he say? He said, only for this moment, and always, or completely manifest and completely hidden. All powerful, all expressive, and totally weak. And here's the verse. These koans, or these cases, usually have an accompanying verse. And this verse goes, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, stars fall, thunder rolls, the mirror faces form without subjectivity. The pearl in a bowl rolls of itself. Don't you see before the hammer gold refined 100 times? Under the scissors, silk from one loom. Of the jhanas that are taught traditionally, the jhana where the Buddha awakened was the jhana that the jhana of equanimity. And we have these things called apramanas, the immeasurable aspects. In other words, aspects that we do not do for just a while. We do forever and are limitless. They're also called the Brahma Viharas. They have to do with passion, karuna, mudita, sympathetic joy, metta, loving kindness. Those are the three that are manifest out in the world. The last one, the one that sort of caps them and contains them, is equanimity. It kind of holds them. It's like the basket that holds these manifestations, the way of the bodhisattva, the loving kindness that is expressed.
Could you repeat this for me? Could you repeat what you just said for me? The three, you said three.
Metta, which is loving kindness. Karuna, which is compassion. And mudita, which is sympathetic joy. Compassionate. You could say compassion expressed a joyful feeling toward others, bringing joy in yourself and others. And the last one is upeksha, which is the Sanskrit word for equanimity, or balance, or non-contradiction of opposites, or non-bias. So when Master Mu was asked how he was feeling, he said, well, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I feel powerful as a sun-faced Buddha that's going to live forever, and I'm just this helpless, poor thing that just has this moment. I wonder what Steve is going through these days. I bet you wonder too, Joe. You know him well. You know him too. We could look a little more closely at what a picture is, what equanimity is. I wonder if we have time. A little bit of time. Shall we? What is this equanimity? Our ordinary understanding of equanimity is kind of a psychological stability, mental calmness, composure, evenness of temper, particularly like in a difficult situation. We would say if someone had composure in a difficult situation, we would say they were equanimous, they had equanimity. Latin is like to have an even mind throughout any situation that happens to you, any impact that happens to you, or any expression that goes out, even mind. That's the Latin for equanimity. The term upeksha, the Sanskrit term upeksha, is a little different. It's a little broader. It actually has much more context. So upeksha, I think the etymology in Sanskrit is to look over. To look over. In other words, like there's manifestations, there's expressions, there's incidents, there's experiences. But to see over that. Over sounds a little inflated, doesn't it, to me? I don't like over so much, but maybe see with or see together, see it all together might be more appropriate. There's a really good Buddhist scholar called Nagano who actually Koban practiced with, studied with at Kamazawa and in Kyoto when he was doing his graduate work. Who wrote about equanimity, about upeksha, said there's three aspects. One is, it's called in Sanskrit, forgive me for using these Sanskrit terms, but they're kind of broader, and they invoke a kind of broader definition. The first aspect is called samatha, and you can kind of connect this word with samadhi. It's that same root, sama. Sama means unity or one or connection. Samatha means equilibrium. Things are in equilibrium. In this case, it's like the mind is in equilibrium, or awareness itself is in equilibrium. It doesn't accept or reject things. It meets all things as the same. All dharmas are the same. All phenomena, all experience is in this kind of understanding or this approach is fundamentally the same. Now in our ordinary world we have a lot of what would you call it? A lot of discriminating awareness. We have a lot of and it's necessary, right? I mean, we have to know that like a door is a door and it has a purpose, and so we qualify that as a door and we use it to go in and out of spaces, you know, very practical, and a window is a window. But in understanding samatha, understanding this equilibrium, the equipoise of existence, in this sense, all dharmas are absolutely the same. There's differentiation, there's particularity, but on this fundamental level, all dharmas are absolutely the same. Just real quickly, this is a really interesting phrase to me. It's from the Bodhisattva Bhumi of Asanga. Oh my goodness. I've got much more to talk about.
At lunch.
Hmm?
Talk about it at lunch.
Can you give me 10 more minutes?
Yep.
Is this okay? I'd like to read this. This is from Asanga. And this is quite archaic language, so it'll sound a little funny. This is from the Tattva Artha chapter of the Bodhisattva Bhumi, the Way of the Bodhisattva. Now you should know that a Bodhisattva, because of his long-time engagement with the knowledge of Dharma selflessness, having understood the inexpressibility of all Dharmas as they really are, does not at all imagine any Dharma. Otherwise, he would not grasp given thing only as precisely suchness only. It does not occur to him. This is the given thing only and the other suchness only. In other words, he doesn't differentiate between suchness or absolute reality and a cup, anything, you know, any event, any expression. In clear understanding, the bodhisattva courses. It's kind of a strange verb. He courses. And coursing in this supreme understanding with insight into suchness, he sees all dharmas as they really are, as being absolutely the same, and seeing everywhere sameness in his mind likewise, he attains supreme equanimity. There's two other aspects, just real briefly, about that Nagano talks about as far as equanimity. The first one is that samatha, which is equilibrium. And the second one is prasatata, which means tranquil flow of mind. And apparently we don't have time to get into those, but tranquil flow of mind, or a kind of ease and composure in dealing with this equanimity, is the second aspect that Nagano talks about. And the third one is called anabogata in Sanskrit. Anabogata means without effort, no effort, or completely spontaneous engagement. So there's the sameness of all things, there's tranquil flow of mind, and there's no effort. So that's how Nagano talks about upeksha, about equanimity. Actually, you asked for something, so I want to end with one more story, and it's in context to sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, the actual expression and practice of equanimity. You asked about effort, and I just talked about effortlessness, effort in practice, effort in life. So there's a story that a student came to see a teacher and said, what is the way? What is the way? And the teacher said, why, ordinary mind is the way. Everyday mind is the way. Your life, just as it is the way. Your consciousness, just as you experience it, is the way. And the student said, well, shall I try for that? Shall I make an effort for that? Teacher said, well, you can try, but good luck. You can try, but your effort won't go anywhere. The student said, well, how can I know this way if I do not make an effort? Teacher said, find that place that is neither effort nor non-effort, and enter there. Find that place that is knowing and not knowing together, or both, you could say, and enter there. Find the place that is not effort, and that is, find the place that is effort, that is the sun-faced Buddha, that is the manifestation Buddha, that is the Buddha that lives forever, that is very powerful, that everything that is in control, that is manifesting thoroughly, and the place of no effort, the moon-faced Buddha. And enter there. Good luck. I have much more to talk about. I'm sorry.